It's Saturday morning, Eastern Daylight Time. Fool guy. But it won't be daylight. Next week. It will be 10 o'clock in the morning, and it will be Eastern Standard Time. That's my little reminder for everybody that it's over tonight. So put your, you got to fall forward, spring back, that kind of thing. Anyway, it's our last program of Daylight Savings Time, and it's going out with a bang as far as the program goes, but not much as far as the weather goes. Pretty nasty
really,
out there.
Really ugly today.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, it's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we're here, despite the weather, to talk and listen. We prefer to do some listening, which would mean that some of you are calling in. And if you want to talk to us, we'll change the whole course of the show. Instead of talking about what we want to talk about, we'll talk about what you want to talk about. So if you want to do that, lines are open, 904-222-8255, and you'll get us. Lots going on. Those of you who carried over from the real estate show heard that we had a lot of thumbs up this week, and there's darn good reason for it. There's some mighty fine green numbers being tossed around this week.
Man, it was a really, really good week in the market. And yeah, it was all across the board. And my favorite part is that while there was just a slew of news, I think it's earnings really driving this market higher, because they're coming in at a pretty good clip, not beating as much as they did during the chaos that was the COVID 18 months or so, but beating at a rate that is substantial, and things just look really good. It's pretty amazing. I'll get into it in more detail as I move through the market wrap, but overall the economy looks pretty strong despite some hiccups here and there. So,
and not only that, despite some things that went on that on normal weeks, some of the news this week would kibosh the market.
That's where I'm going with this.
Good.
So, yeah, we managed to get through a Fed meeting without a big down day. That might be the first time
miracle
in history
number one
that has happened. And on top of that, the Fed announced that they were going to start tapering, which should have caused at least a hiccup.
Miracle number two.
I'm hoping that means that it's that the Fed scaling back their bond purchases has already been priced in, and this is the market was expecting it. Powell's done a good job of announcing it. It was pretty clear to everyone that that's exactly what was going to happen at this meeting, and it did, and there was no reaction. Check, check, check. All good. So that puts June of 2022 on notice as the first potential rate hike. I, for one, think we need it before then. I also do not think we'll see one in June. So
I was going to say, even though I agree with your premise that we need one, I am absolutely convinced it's not going to happen that soon.
Yep, me neither. I think that it's just they're too chicken to do it, so I just don't see it.
Although he does get renominated, if it's him, in February. And if that goes through well, then at least there'll be a little bit of flexibility that he's got.
So there was some other news this week. On Tuesday, we saw some elections. They clearly showed what the poll numbers have been saying for a while. Less than a year into the Biden presidency, people are very unhappy with Democrat policy. So realizing they needed something to get a win this week, the Dems pushed through their $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill without passing. They didn't even vote on the Build Back Better social spending bill, but they did pass the infrastructure one. That was something they had promised they were not going to do first. They did it anyway. Friday night, I believe, and I think it was just to get a win after those horrible elections for them.
And AOC took her toys and went home.
As she has been known to do. So along the way this week, we also saw the Dow reach 36,000, which is sort of an arbitrary milestone. But
it's almost three dozen.
There was a famous book about it back in the 90s by the same name. And so it has some meaning.
He got laughed at,
that
too.
Regard. It did. I remember studying it in business school, and they said that it's definitely theoretically possible, but unlikely. So pretty funny that here we are today, and it happened.
And not just once. It closed consecutively over 36.
We saw all three indexes reach all-time highs multiple times this week, and even small caps, which had been basically trading sideways for many months, managed to break out to new highs this week. And then we saw strong jobs reports from both the government and ADP, which just confirms what we've been saying every week on the show this year, that it's going to be a good year. And so far, we have been correct about that. And that makes me happy because everything is up.
By the way, who gets credit for the economy?
The economy?
Yeah.
Which
president gets credit?
Well, that's a good question.
It's a rule of economics that the first year of a new president doesn't get any credit, good or bad.
Well,
it's all pushed back. So this is the Trump economy, the last year of the Trump economy.
I mean, does it matter? And that might be the rule, but also in politics, politicians always take credit for the good.
It's an overriding rule.
And blame the bad on the last guy.
In political speech, that's called the supremacy clause.
Yes. I don't know if we can use that word, but it is definitely a thing that happens. So if you're confused to why the market continues to move higher, you really don't have to look any further than earnings. The forecast for the next 12 months of corporate earnings is 24% higher than the peak of pre-COVID. Think about that. What we've been through in the last 18 months, and if everything goes according to forecast, which actually things have been beating forecast, mm-hmm. but if it goes according to forecast, the next year will be 24% higher than the peak that we saw
pre-COVID. Speaking of rules of economics, recessions are always good for earnings because the corporations get lean and mean. And as business starts to grow, the marginal profit is good. The only thing that I saw this week that made me scratch my head a bit was that there was a big drop in productivity. And that's exactly the opposite of what you'd expect.
It is. But I have a good example of that later about why it's happening in one particular industry, which I think you'll like. So that 24% higher is also, it continues to improve. It's not improving at the rate that it was, say, over the last year. The slowdown in the increase has happened, but the increase, it's still increasing. It's not contracting. So that number could very well look even better than 24% higher in the next year. So if you're really looking for a reason why the market continues to go up, look no further than that. But in the short term, things look a little bit different. Almost every index is in extreme overbought territory. Bullish sentiment has increased greatly. Those two things are a recipe for some short-term volatility. So don't be surprised if next week we see a little bit of shakiness, I'll call it.
Historically, the middle of November has been shaky, but the first part and the last part have been great. And December knocks them dead, if you're only looking at history.
So far it's followed that exact pattern. We'll see if that continues next week. Earnings season continues to roll on. The beat rate's now coming in around 74%. The long-term average is around 66.6. So we're well above that, but it's down from the records that we set over the last few quarters. Still nothing disappointing about that type of number. If you look at the revenue side, we're at 68.4 versus the long-term average of 59.3. Kind of the same range there, still very strong. Guidance being raised at 13% rate, smaller than last quarter's 19.7, but higher than the long-term average as
well. Any comparison to last quarter is going to fail.
Yep, last quarter was off the charts good.
I doubt seriously that you and I will ever see that kind of an earnings season again.
Maybe not.
All right, we got a lot more to say, especially about jobs that don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And a trivia question this week brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Kenny at 904-636-7888. All right. In my lifetime, I'll give you a hint, that's since 1950, the maximum number of record all-time highs in the S&P 500 in one year is 77. How many have we had so far? And then if you want to just play around a little bit, what are we on track to reach? But I'm really looking at the number this year. And it's not 77.
All right.
See, I've already established a high range. That's like a gimme. Oh, you can have one free throw, but you can take it from anywhere.
Wait, what?
Never mind. It's a sports week. Anyway.
Okay.
jobs, and more jobs.
Well, let's talk about jobs first. There was some good news on the jobs front. The headline number for the government report came in up 531,000 in October versus 450,000 estimated. Plus, August and September were revised up 235,000 for a net gain of 766,000 jobs. That was pretty solid. The unemployment rate dropped from 4.8 to 4.6, and average hourly earnings were up 0.4% in October and are now up 4.2% from a year ago. So all pretty strong numbers, and I know you have some thoughts on this.
Yeah, we've been talking during the break about things. The sort of quizzical part to me in the whole jobs thing is that for some reason with this gigantic recovery, we have not been able to get the participation rate up. It just hangs in, and it hangs in at a level about 5 points too low. So Adam and I were trying to explain away the whole, I don't know, just I guess it's called an anomaly, where you'd think with all these jobs available and wages rising, this thing ought to be bringing people out of the woodwork like crazy. So we were speculating on a few things, and Adam brought up a couple of really good points, I thought. One of them is that it's not so much as, and we're not adding to it so much as we're replacing people. As everybody knows now, the people turning 62 and up every day are over 10,000 people. Now, a lot of people every day are retiring, and there's nothing that spurs retirements better than a big old 401k balance. So a lot of people who had postponed retirement are now retiring, and people are coming in to replace them. There's a couple other things you pointed out, too, but it seems to me that somehow, if we're going to have a true economic recovery, we've got to get that participation rate up.
I think it'll happen. I think it's going to take some time to sort of get over all the cash that people had received for free during COVID, and once that is burned through, I really suspect we're going to see people pile back into the workforce, because at some point you need money. And whenever that point is, you're going to go find a job or turn to a life of crime, and the job seems like the easier way to go these days.
I really hope that's true.
Yeah, me too. Speaking of which, we've all seen businesses, and especially restaurants, are having trouble staffing. There's help wanted signs almost everywhere. Every time you go out, if you look in the window, there's a good chance you're going to see a help wanted sign. And the starting wages are going to seem very high compared to what they used to be. This isn't just anecdotal. The numbers confirm what we're seeing. Wages in the restaurant industry are up 22% year to date. 22%. Crazy.
Wow.
Despite that, productivity of restaurant workers has been falling somewhat dramatically since the pandemic began. What that says is that restaurants are being forced to pay a lot more for workers who are doing a much worse job. So that seems about right if you've been out lately.
Yeah.
It's a sad, sad fact, but it seems to be true.
Yep.
Also, I touched on earlier some supply chain disruptions. And one of the major reasons for that, I haven't really heard this anywhere, but it's a big deal. There is a major shift in the way that Americans spend their money over the last 18 months. As a percentage of GDP, Americans had been steadily lowering their consumption of goods almost every year since 1990.
Yeah, that's the material things versus experiences.
We've been heavily leaning away from goods and towards experiences. And the drop over that time was about 4 percentage points. So in the last, 30-something years, it dropped 4 percentage points as a percentage of GDP, which is a huge number. However, with the onset of COVID 18 months ago, that number has rebounded almost the full 4 percentage points compared to GDP in 18 months. Just to put that in comparison, I wish I'd looked up the GDP of the U.S., but a 4 percentage point change in the GDP is an enormous number.
Seven trillion?
What we haven't done is attributed to the problems in the supply chain to that shift. If you made that major shift, it took us 30 years to decrease 4 percentage points, and then we increase 4 in 18 months. Yeah, it's going to cause some problems with the supply chains. Yeah,
one would think.
But the good thing is,
especially since so many people, and there's two of them in this room, totally missed what was going to happen with COVID.
I didn't hear anyone accurately predict what was going to happen with COVID, but that it's just insane that a 30-year trend has been reversed in 18 months. And the fact that we are having as few problems with supply chain as we are should be the narrative, not the other way around.
You know, there's an expression that you know that I dearly hate. And that's when somebody says, it's different this time.
Yeah, I hate that too.
Because 99.9% of the time, it is not. This time it is.
Well, yes, because we had such a shock to the system that we have literally never seen before.
Yeah. And the only other time we've had a shock of that gravity, in my opinion, was in 1929. And that had so much systematic junk built into it that you couldn't possibly have seen this.
Maybe 2008 would qualify.
It was close. So, it was ugly.
Yeah.
And it was systematic.
Yep. So anyways, that those types of things, I think, have been underreported by media outlets, and specifically by financial media outlets. Those, we should really be noting that Americans have really changed the way that they live. And yes, that has caused some of the disruptions. It's the reason that those ships are floating off of California is because we are ordering so much more stuff from China. And you could see it in the trade imbalance this month. It was a record high 80.9 billion in September. Yeah, crazy. And some of that is increased prices, but some of it is more stuff coming into the country from overseas.
Yeah, and all of it is money we leave over there so that
Absolutely.
They can turn around and come back here and buy us out.
No doubt about it. So big changes in the economy over the last 18 months, and we need to account for all of that.
Yep.
On a totally different note, I have an announcement that I've been talking about, the Jog for a Cure 5K race that we've been supporting. Some friends of ours lost their son almost a couple of years ago now to cancer, and they are doing a 5K race in Nocatee on November 27th. It's a Saturday morning. It's the morning of the Florida State football game. So you can go and pre-burn all the calories you plan on drinking that afternoon at this race. The early bird sign-up fee just went away, so it's now $40 to register. They have over 80 participants already with a few weeks left to register, so it should be a really fun time. If you're interested, please go to joestrong.org, or you can always call us at the office. I can give you all the information. That's 904-685-1505.
And if you're sedentary like I am and you go to that website, they will happily take your donation.
Absolutely.
Which goes to children's cancer.
Yes. All the net proceeds of the race will be dedicated to there is a group at St. Jude's that does research on the specific type of leukemia that took Joe, and all of the money is going to benefit them.
Yeah, it's a nasty type, too.
Yep. Right now, it's leukemia itself is highly curable. Mm-hmm. That form of leukemia is not.
And how do you get it? Bad luck.
Bad luck. That's it.
So we need to counteract bad luck with good medicine.
Yep, that's the plan.
If anybody can do it, they can do it. All right. I don't have too much time to get into too much here. There was one other thing I wanted to mention. The unemployment rate did fall to 4.6%. Okay, that's kind of nebulous and expected. But I looked up U6, which is the real unemployment rate that brings in all the people that are on the sidelines, and that fell to 8.3%. And that is not bad.
No,
it's truly not bad
at all.
So what I'm looking at here, I'm trying to find a reason to be pessimistic for any part of the rest of this year in the market. And every time I turn around, I fail to do so. And our sort of corporate philosophy in our office is that if you can't explain rationally why something either did happen, is happening, or maybe is about to happen, then it's just a short-term little blip. And the oldest line in the book is never make long-term decisions based on short-term events. And right now, the long-term, even though it may not be as long as it usually is, I'm still pretty high on the rest of this year. And as Adam has been explaining, when earnings are like they are, and people are buying like they are, employment's what it is, I see nothing but good news ahead. in the absence of all the usual things that could happen out there. My proverbial line on that is, if there's a mushroom cloud over Tel Aviv, then all bets are off.
Well, and there is a potential small bombshell with the COVID vaccine mandates.
Also.
That could, if companies do have to fire workers, that could cause more supply chain disruptions in January.
Yes, it could. And that would just be chalked up to government stupidity, which I'll talk about more after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And once again, the trivia question is out there. How many new record highs has the S&P set this year? And the point is, are we going to make it the biggest year ever or not? Hard to say. But first, I wanted to share the highlights of a letter we sent to our clients this week after Monday started out with a really good day, and that it might be a good chance to just communicate, because nobody can communicate the exact right number. Some are overbearing, others you never hear from. So just once in a while, when the mood hits and there's something to say, I thought it would be a good time to do it. And of course, as always, there's a point in this too. So suddenly it's November and the clocks are about to change. We'll talk about that earlier. But there's some other things that are changing too. And I think right now we should, I'll go through this and I'll hit a couple of the highlights. But the three major indices started out the week with a bang, with new records, and they ended it with a bang with other new records. Of course, I couldn't have written that on the second, but I can tell it now. But we said that we continue to believe the economy is not in immediate danger. The Fed basically has a welcome mat at its policy door, even though we did hear the taper announcement, but actually the taper announcement was only formally made this week. It was informally made weeks and weeks ago, and no one was surprised. We don't see anything that has a reasonable likelihood to pass through Congress that would allow us this year, like last year, to not take our required minimum distributions from our retirement accounts. In other words, it's basically a done deal. We're going to have to take them. Now, you got to remember that some rules have changed. People born before July 1, 49 are subject to 2021 RMDs. And if you have inherited an account, then you are responsible no matter what your age, and that even applies to Roth accounts. People born on or after July 1, 49, are subject to next year RMDs because of the Secure One Act raised the age from 70 and a half, that's why we're dealing with the July date, 70 and a half to 72. So this year, those people are not required to, but next year, in the absence of change, they will be turning 72. And I might note that I'm one of them. But there is this thing that keeps popping up in the news cycles, too, called Secure 2.0. That Secure Act, as you may remember, it had huge support earlier in the year, like 420-some congressmen, I think. That just never happens. Well, this one is approximately the same in its support. So, of course, rather than take the easy way and just vote it in, they haggle and they do congressional things and make sausage out of it. But it keeps coming back, and partly the reason is that there's a sponsor on either side of the aisle, so they all have reason to do it, and partly because one of the biggest impacts in that law will be to people of a certain age, as we say. And it's funny how that works, but people my age vote. They vote in horrendously large percentages, and everybody up there understands it. You keep us happy, you might keep your job. So do it. Anyway, I think there's a really good chance that those of us born after July 1, 49 might get another freebie year. I'll let you know as soon as we know. But everybody gets a little break next year because the new life expectancy tables have been accepted by IRS, which means that your factor, which means you divide your year-end balance by this factor, that's your RMD. It is changing so that your required withdrawals from the accounts are smaller. Purpose of that being to extend the life of these accounts because of the extended life of Americans. So know that next year you're going to get a little break one way or the other, and some of us might get another break, and I would be just thrilled, of course. Another one, everybody should understand that once again this year, every taxpayer gets a $300 charitable deduction, not as a tax deduction, as an income. In other words, an above the line. All it does is come directly off your income. But this year, if you're married filing jointly, you get $600. So everybody who's in a charitable mood this year, make darn sure that you pay your first $300 or $600 for a couple from a taxable account to the charity and get receipts for it. And then your income will go down by that. And a reduction in income is worth a heck of a lot more than a tax deduction that you probably wouldn't take anyway because hardly anybody does anymore. We'll see. The rules, the changing in the rules has been pretty dramatic. And I would suggest to everyone, if you have any questions about them, and especially if you've inherited an IRA or something like that, consult a good tax advisor. Now, all the CPAs out there, please close your ears. But we know a lot more than the average CPA about retirement account rules. They change so fast that while they're studying tax rules, we're studying things like withdrawal rules. Follow that with every time we tell you what we think you should do and you agree with it, consult your CPA. That's what they're good for. So just a couple of things before year end, and I will tell you this. I can only speak for TD Ameritrade because they're our custodian. Response times are getting longer and longer.
And it's not going to get any better
before the holidays. It will not get better. I would definitely not wait till December 15th to decide I needed to take an RMD this year.
No.
I think the sooner the better. Now, there's a flip side to that one, too. If you're in the age group, born on or after July 1, 1949, I would not take next year's very early. There's a very good chance, I believe, that rule is going to change to eliminate your need to take one next year.
Unless you need the money or...
Yeah, exactly. Something like 70 or 80% of the people overdraw their RMD requirement anyway, and that's perfectly fine. But people should know that if they're in one of those situations where it isn't that important, they might have a break coming up.
Mm-hmm.
A few of the things, we'll be tidying up all the little things that might change between now and the end of the year. Little tax tips, because so many things cannot be undone once they're done. And speaking of IRS and limits, I was extremely disappointed, and I know Adam was too. We have railed for years that the measly contributions we can make to IRAs, which are way, way smaller than simple plans, SEP plans, 401k plans, all that, they need to be playing catch-up. And I don't mean the age 50 and over catch-up. I mean the whole shooting match catch-up. Why $6,000? Or we had $6,000?
Yeah, $6,000. That's it.
It's just mind-boggling. It was $3,000 way back when I first started doing this stuff.
And you get $6,000 if you're not covered by a 401k
right.
at work. But if you are fortunate enough to be covered by a 401k at work, you can do $19,500.
And if you're 50 or more, you can add to that a new catch-up number.
Mm-hmm.
The $6,500 is the 403, 401k, 457 catch-up. But they did change some things. The new thrift savings plan, who are 50 and over, and that goes for all the 401ks and such too. It's $27,000 rather than $26,000. So you get an extra $1,000, and the below that is $20,500, up from $19,500. So yeah, they gave us a little break, but they gave us a little Social Security increase too. But they're going to take that away with Medicare.
The thing is, this change that they made, increasing the contribution limit on a 401k, affects so few people.
Right.
I mean, I would guess less than 5% of people max out their 401ks at $19,500. And then increasing that to $20,500, it only affects high-income earners' ability to deduct more. Why wouldn't you go for the low-hanging fruit that affects more people, the IRA, up it to $7,000? I mean, it affects many, many more people than this stupid change on the 401k. It's just ridiculous.
And ditto for the Roth IRA.
Yeah.
It should go up at the same time. Now, they were going to eliminate the backdoor Roth IRA, and for those of you who know what it is, it's very interesting. But that got pulled out at the last minute, and it looks to be safe, as did Roth conversions get pulled out, and I believe they're safe
maybe,
for now, too.
Maybe. We'll see.
It ain't over till the fat lady sings, as they say. I'm not sure when all of this is going to happen. I wish I could tell you more about what was passed in the middle of the night last night, but you just can't find news on it yet. But next week, I promise you, we will know a lot about what has already passed. All right, we got a lot more in the last segment, so don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And quickly, our trivia question is still open. How many new records have been set in the S&P 500 this year? And with that said, good morning, Marshall.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are y'all?
Wonderful. You?
Fine, fine.
Staying dry? Mowing the lawn, all that stuff today?
Well, no, I did walk out to get wet to see what damage the rain had caused. Yeah. Fortunately, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, a lot of palm fronds.
A lot of things going on.
Yep. What's up?
Let me throw a wild guess out there at 44.
44, he says. 44 is too low.
Okay.
Been a pretty good year, hasn't it?
Yes. My question for you is, and I appreciate you being about a year ahead of me and going through all these events over time for us mature individuals.
Yep.
We were at 70.5.
Yep.
We went to 72.
Yes.
Qualified charitable deductions, did that stay at, you could do it beginning
it stayed,
at age 70.5?
Yes, sir. It did. That is another of the salient points for the end of this year. And for people who don't know what that is, if you are required to take a withdrawal from your IRA and you want to avert the tax man, you can write the check and have your custodian write the check directly to the qualified charity, and then you do not get a 1099 and you do not need a tax deduction, which is good because you wouldn't get it. So it's a way to lower your income for people who can and want to over 70.5. So it doesn't just happen to people with RMDs, because a 70.5-year-old today could do it, and it would just keep that income down, but it is not a necessity. If you're of RMD age, it counts toward your RMD.
Well, it helps you build up your after-tax savings.
Exactly right. And who doesn't want to do that?
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Good to hear from you. There's a lot of the stuff that is very technical. And as I said, just give people like us a call, because it is an absolute requirement that we know and understand these things.
I'm glad Marshall brought up QCDs, because it is that time of year. And so if you're not familiar with them and you are over age 70.5, you should familiarize yourself with them, especially if you're in one of two categories: a person that is charitable minded and gives money, even a moderate or small amount of money to charities every year, or you tithe to your church. That's probably the most common one that we see. It's a great way to get a tax deduction if you are tithing to your church and you...
Actually, an income reduction.
Reduction is a better
tax way. Tax deduction used to be the way we handle these things.
Yeah, exactly. But most people claim the standard deduction these days, so you don't itemize, so therefore you can't deduct on your taxes if you just go to church every week and put money in the bowl. That is not deductible for you. But if you do it through a QCD monthly, you can have your custodian, TD Ameritrade or whoever that is, send the church checks directly, and it never shows up to you as income. And it's a great way to save some money on taxes.
That is one of the best things they ever did, and there were people fighting to get rid of it, but the cooler heads prevailed, and it's still around.
Yep.
I like that.
Yeah, it's a great system. We probably have 10 clients that use it, and it all goes to great recipients that really deserve the money, and it's just a wonderful program.
And those of you in that client base that are listening, it's that time. So
it
get
is.
Your list together. We need lead time this year more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
All right, do you know the name Jennifer Granholm?
No.
Lucky.
Okay.
I think she was a governor of Michigan or something like that. Not sure about that one, but Anyway, she's the erstwhile energy secretary.
Ah. Oh, was she the one that was laughing?
That's the one.
Okay, yeah.
She was asked a very serious question by a journalist over the last couple of days about what are you going to do to help lower oil prices, and she broke into that typical politician's fake laughter that lasts three times too long, and then explained that oil prices are set by OPEC. I don't have a thing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Then why was Trump able to do it? Oh, let's see, pipelines, drilling, fracking, all that stuff. This is the biggest dereliction of duty I've ever seen, and I would call upon her right now to resign. So everybody who agrees with me, let's get on the case.
Yeah,
this is ridiculous. You are paying it every single time you turn on your car and it burns some gas. You have to fill it up with more expensive gas, heating your house, cooling your house. You're paying it, and she is sitting there laughing in your face.
They just replace her with someone just like her, so it really doesn't matter. But it is a regressive tax on working folks, there's unfortunately nothing we can do about it right now.
And speaking of that, let's see, November 1st from MarketWatch, oil giant Saudi Aramco sees third quarter income rise to $30.4 billion.
Shocking.
It is shocking. Now, from November 6th, Saudi Aramco raises oil prices after OPEC Plus defies Biden. Now, how do they have price control this year, and they didn't have it last year?
It's hard to, I don't know why.
Could be because we're importing this year and we were exporting last year?
It might be.
And yet they have no control, right? Sorry. Not buying it, folks. All right. Math. Washington, D.C. style. You're going to love this. I do. There are a lot of things in government that don't mean exactly what they say. For one, taxes are called contributions. Spending is called investments. Fair share equals more than you pay now and more than you have ever paid. Budget cuts are items that increase less than they were going to in the first proposal. Tax expenditures are items that reduce government's take below 100% of what you make. Paying for a program means taking new taxes from other taxpayers. The wealthy are people who either make more money than congressmen or have a higher net worth than congressmen, or both. Scoring a bill means estimating the cost to the government or to the people using ridiculously flawed assumptions and being forced to use the so-called independent, what is really left-leaning Congressional Budget Office, who only has one thing that they can do. They take your input exactly verbatim. They don't think about it or anything. They plug in a number and bring it back, and they're always wrong. Independent agencies that check things are groups of left-leaning employees, media companies, or think tanks. Well, here's the greatest math I've ever seen. The SALT deductions, state and local, they are estimated to be revenue enhancers for the government if that lid is raised. Now, let's just bear with me here. You're getting a $10,000 tax deduction in New York today. Tomorrow, they lift the lid on that, or they raise the lid on that, and that taxpayer pays less in taxes. So the only direct result of raising the SALT limit is that a bunch of rich people pay less in taxes. How can this be a revenue generator?
I don't see it.
Well, let me tell you. This is congressional math. The Trump tax cut is set to expire in 2026. The $10,000 limit was part of the Trump tax cut. That means in 2026, the new way is that it's unlimited again. So they stretch it out over a period of time, 10 or 15 years, and they say, okay, we're going up immediately. I've read 72.5, 80. I don't know yet. I'll know that by next week, I'm sure. But if you take it way, way out, it'll cost us money for the first 5 years. But after that, look how dramatic it is. And there are, I think, 376,000 I came up with deduction for people who make well over $1 million. So they're going to pay a much greater tax load out in 2026 and beyond, because instead of getting the lid lifted, the lid is only being raised. So the difference is going to make money for the government. Now, did you all get that?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. I did.
You can't make this stuff up, people. You absolutely can't. I really honestly wish I'd been able to come in here today with the entire breakdown of what passed in the middle of the night last night, but I can't. I researched it all morning, and nobody had gotten up early enough to publish it yet. Plus, it was only released the night before 10 o'clock or midnight or something like that, and it's 2,000 pages long. And I would really appreciate the journalists and everybody else who are talking about this thing if they would actually read it and figure out what it means, because it's going to be a bear. There are things embedded in this thing that are going to cost you money every single year, and we deserve to know about it. That's all I can say, I guess. Anyway, we've had 64 new records, and it would take 77 to beat the old record. We'll see you next week. This is the Banway Financial Hour.